March 27th. I'm trying to get settled into a weekly schedule. When Thimble Pleasures first opened, I was there 9 to 5 every day of the week, sometimes 8 to 7. Then, when things settled down, I'd go most days, but not every day, and I never stuck to any regular routine. The thing is, I'm a creature of routine, and up until Thimble Pleasures opened, it was pretty easy for me to stick to one. Coffee, breakfast, walk, quilt, lunch, quilt, nap, read, dinner, quilt, watch Jeopardy, read in bed until the book dropped on my face. Of course, this routine occasionally got disrupted, but those disruptions usually came in the form of two rambunctious grandchildren in need of supervision while their mother took a moment to regain her sanity. Fine by me. I'm always happy to do Grammy time. The opening of Thimble Pleasures was a huge routine disruptor, but I've never resented it, of course. It's been fun to be a part of this amazing new venture, and those exhausting early days were a blast. They reminded me of when Sheila and I did those high school musicals, everybody working together to make something happen. None of us entirely confident that we could pull it off. Lots of inside jokes and junk food. Opening day, or in the case of the musicals, opening night, was almost always a letdown. The sense of impending crisis dissipated, but so did the sense of having a shared mission. Once Sheila hired Carol Woolsey last October, I felt a little bit in the way when I went to Thimble Pleasures. Sure, there were things that needed doing, but often when I started, say, reshelving bolts of fabric, Carol would flutter by and announce, "Oh, I was just about to take care of that." I'd keep doing what I was doing, but I felt a little tense, like I was somehow in Carol's way. I started asking Sheila to send me the work schedule every week so I could go in when Carol wasn't there. Once Carol started working full-time, that became harder and harder. And then this year, I added the Sew Sisters to my schedule and joined the planning committee for the Quilt History Museum. We've got a meeting next week, and I've been working like crazy on my Maisie Baker McGrath presentation. And of course, I have an adorable new grandbaby to add to the mix. Well, I feel creatively and personally fulfilled, but I'm also starting to feel out of sorts, the way I always do when life feels scattershot. I was taking my walk this morning and trying to figure out a schedule I could stick to. I've got regularly scheduled weekly and monthly events, the Sew Sisters, the Peacemakers. Starting in April, I can't believe April is only a week away, I'll have monthly museum planning committee meetings. I'm trying to keep my afternoons open from 1 to 4 p.m. for sewing, reading, and Grammy duty. That all seems reasonable and doable until you throw in Thimble Pleasures. I realized on my walk that I either need to come up with a regular Thimble Pleasures schedule regardless of when Carol is working, or I need to stop working at Thimble Pleasures. And that's when it occurred to me. I'm not really working at Thimble Pleasures, am I? I mean, it's not a job. I don't have a set of tasks that only I can accomplish. In fact, I'm starting to feel like more often than not, I'm in the way when I go over there. This morning was the first time I ever articulated that thought. Not only am I not needed at Thimble Pleasures, I'm in the way. And then to test out this new hypothesis, I went over to the store a few minutes after it opened. Sheila was in the classroom shooting a how-to video. Emily was in her tiny office working on taxes. Sophie, one of the store's two part-time workers, was manning, womaning, the cash register, and Carol was helping a customer pick fabrics for a quilt. There wasn't anything for me to do. Oh, in an hour or two, there might be some tidying up. If the store got busy later on, I could work the second register or cut fabric. But how busy was the store going to get on a Wednesday? Just as I was being struck by the realization that I was more or less unnecessary in this scenario, Carol and her customer walked past me. Carol looked at me, simultaneously rolled her eyes, and shook her head as though to say, "I can't believe you're here again." But she didn't actually greet me. I definitely felt unwanted. So I texted Sheila that I'd stopped by, but she was busy, and then I left. Sheila texted me back 3 hours later to say, "Sorry I missed you." But that was it. I think it might be time to quit my job. That's not actually my job. The good news is, I don't have to put in my notice. I just have to stop showing up. March 31st. Sheila and I met for lunch at Linway's on Friday. I expected her to at least act like she was disappointed that I'd quit my non-job. But diary, she almost seemed relieved.
"I couldn't have opened the shop without you," she said as she cut her BLT into quarters, something she's done since junior high because in seventh grade it made her feel fancy. "And I'm not just talking about the loan. I'm talking about all of your hard work getting everything ready and helping me figure out what to order and how to set things up. Not to mention the first few months when I didn't have any full-time staff except for Emily. But ever since Carol came on board, I've been a little worried that you've felt underutilized. And now, to make matters worse, Carol's mad at you, which is definitely affecting the store's vibe." I took a bite of my egg salad sandwich and nodded. Ever since Abby broke up with Jason, Carol's given me the cold shoulder. I'm not sure why. For one thing, I didn't have anything to do with the breakup. For another, you'd think she'd be happy that her 30-something son was no longer dating a postmenopausal senior citizen. I mean, it's hard to imagine Carol was thrilled by that particular May-December romance. Maybe it's just a pride thing. Maybe Carol is wondering who in her right mind would break up with Jason, one of Milton Falls' most eligible bachelors. I was a little surprised when Jessica told me that Abby had broken things off. According to Jess, she told her mother about Jason hitting on her, using the offhand approach that Sheila had suggested, making it sound like Jason had been joking. But Abby's no dummy. She knew it hadn't been a joke at all. If Jason had hit on someone else, Abby told Jessica, she would have been mad, but she could have gotten over it. But any man who treated her daughter like a boy toy was simply beneath contempt. Score a point for Abby. Not that I'm keeping score. Okay, maybe I'm keeping score a little bit. I reached across the table and stole one of Sheila's chips. "I think Carol just doesn't like me, which is weird because I am so likable."
"You really are,"
Sheila agreed, reaching across the table to nab one of my sweet potato fries.
"But you're also a woman who has everything. She probably resents that."
"I'm a woman who has everything? Me, who is no longer in possession of my youthful figure or my girlish good looks?"
"Oh, you're still pretty cute," Sheila argued.
I shrugged. "Maybe. Well, I'm glad you're okay with me stepping away from Thimble Pleasures. I mean, I'll always be there for you in a pinch, and I'm happy to continue in my role as advisor."
"Good to know,"
Sheila replied as she waved to our waitress.
"What do you think? Pie for dessert or bread pudding?"
Bread pudding? I shook my head in disgust. What exactly is bread pudding other than soggy cake? Besides, there's key lime pie on the menu. Sheila slapped her forehead as though she couldn't believe she'd been so foolish.
Obviously, key lime pie is the only correct answer here. Do you want to split a piece?
Please don't tell me you're cutting back on calories again. Otherwise, I can't be happy that you and Tom are back together.
I'm only cutting back a little bit, Sheila insisted. He keeps talking about us spending a week at his lake house this summer. It sounds like at some point I'm going to have to put on a bathing suit.
And you'll look great, I said. You have fantastic legs, and that's all that matters.
Because that's the only thing I can't cover up?
Exactly. Now, what's taking our waitress so long? We went on to eat pie and talk about the various diets we've gone on over the years to get ready for swimsuit season. My favorite was the one we went on in high school, where you ate a steak and an orange for breakfast and lunch, and then a steak, an orange, and a salad with fat-free dressing for dinner. The only thing was, my mom made me buy my own steaks, so I might have lost 10 pounds in 3 weeks, but I also spent all of my babysitting money on steak, money I was saving up for a new wardrobe once I lost all the weight. Life's little ironies. Am I right? April 10th. Janet called earlier today. She's coming to visit next weekend so we can discuss moving my parents closer to us now that they're no longer golfing or really all that aware that they live in Arizona. In fact, when Janet went to visit them in early March, my dad thought he was still in Milton Falls. "There's got to be some way to get them into the memory care center at Breezeways," Janet said when she called. "One of us has to know someone who's on the board of directors there." It only occurred to me after we hung up that I do know someone, Tom Grangerfield. But I don't know him well enough to ask him to get my parents into Breezeways. Of course, Sheila does, but that's a big ask. The conversation made me anxious, so I headed straight for my sewing room as soon as we were done. The Sew Sisters' April block of the month is a cute little number called Losses and Crosses, or maybe it's Crosses and Losses. Anyway, I've decided to make a bunch for a charity quilt. Daryl's Guild is making quilts for the Milton Falls Children's Home, and he thought it would be okay for me to contribute one that wasn't strictly modern. "Just use solid colors and we'll call it modern traditional," he told me. So I'm making the blocks using periwinkle and white fabric, which I personally find a very soothing color combination. When I was in sixth grade, there was a girl in my class named Alice Lowe who lived at the children's home. Alice was quiet, and her clothes never fit right, but she was one of the four kids in the top reading group, which I also belonged to. Our reading group was so special that we were allowed to meet in the library while everyone else had to stay in the classroom. And we read actual novels instead of the boring sixth grade reading book, which had the very unenticing title of The New People and Progress. In our top tier group, we read books like A Wrinkle in Time and From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler. I don't think I'll ever forget going to the library on Fridays during reading group time. The two other kids besides me and Alice were Steve Pirelli, who had emerged that year as one of the popular boys of the sixth grade, and Stuart Waddle, who, I'm sorry to report, actually did waddle. A little bit on the chubby side was our Steve. We met for an hour, and during that time, we talked about books like a bunch of New York Times book reviewers. At first, our teacher gave us lists of discussion questions for the books we read, but by the spring, we didn't need them. We just sat down at the table in the library's little conference room and got down to business. Plot points, character traits, things we would have definitely done differently had we been the author. None of us were friends outside of the group. Steve ran around with a sporty crew of popular boys. Stuart had two nerdy best friends who were always talking about Star Trek and the Lord of the Rings books. I was part of the B-list girls clique, the group of smart and nice girls who longed to be popular but weren't quite mean enough. Except, I'm ashamed to say, when it came to Alice Lowe. Excuse me, I need to go make a quilt block before I can continue with this story. Later. Okay, I'm back. I actually made two blocks. Quilting, as they say, is my therapy. Anyway, during reading group time, Alice and I were practically best friends. We loved all of the same books, the Little House books, the Anne of Green Gables books, the Marguerite Henry horse books, and, most of all, Little Women. Like all tomboyish girls, Jo was my favorite character, and Amy was Alice's favorite. I remember thinking that was strange. After all, Amy was pretty, and Alice was plain. Amy was artistic, and Alice could barely draw a stick figure. It wasn't until later that I realized Alice wished that, like Amy, she'd been pretty and pampered, artistic and adored, and a little bit spoiled. Given how much I liked talking with Alice, given that she was smart and funny and interesting, in fact, looking back on it, she was a lot more fun to be around than the girls in my friend group. Why didn't I ever ask her to sit with me and my friends at lunch? I could see her eating by herself, reading a book as she chewed on her sandwich, and occasionally glancing over at our table as though she were hoping we'd invite her to join us. Like my other friends, Alice was nice and she was smart, and while she was on the plain side and her clothes didn't fit and they weren't in style, she was still clean and well-groomed. She kept her Mary Janes polished and her knee socks pulled up. She wasn't all that different from the rest of us, except for one thing. She lived in the children's home. The one time I suggested to my friends that we ask Alice to eat with us, they all shook their heads no. "My mother says I'm not allowed to play with children from the home," Mary Jo Ellerby announced. "They come from bad families." "They don't have families," I pointed out. Mary Jo sneered at me. "That's because their mothers did bad things with boys." I had no idea what she meant. I asked my mother later that afternoon, which is when I got my first lesson in sex education. So no, I never asked Alice Lowe to eat lunch at our table or to come home with me after school, which she'd hinted once or twice that she'd like to do so she could look at my books. My mother wouldn't have minded. She was a woman of enormous common sense. She would never have blamed Alice for the mistakes her parents had made. Still, I couldn't do it. I didn't have the courage. I couldn't be friends with Alice, even though she would have been an amazing friend. Maybe I would have changed my mind, but the next year Alice disappeared, and I never saw her again. I hope she got adopted, but I'll never know. All I know is that I wish I'd been nicer. I wish I'd been a better, braver person. So I guess I'm trying to make up for it now, the only way I know how. With a quilt made with love.
Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.